Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone app.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
And good evening, Laguna Beach, and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this show airs live every Monday evening at 8 p.m., and it's called Moody, Moody with Dr. Sage. And what we do is we explore our moods, our minds, and our real lives, and just try to dive into different topics each week. So tonight I'm solo. I have some more great guests coming in the following weeks. But tonight I was really struggling with what should I talk about? And I like to really reflect on what's coming up on social media or what I'm reading about. And the Marie Kondo concept, Marie Kondo in your life. One of my best girlfriends was saying she was at Home Goods returning a bunch of things because she was trying to Marie Kondo her life. And I was, okay, this is something I need to really focus on. So my daughter and I actually watched the new Netflix show about Marie Kondo. And really it's based on her book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. And she has another one out called Spark Joy, an illustrated masterclass on the art of organizing and tidying up. Now, there's quite a bit of, you know, as with all things, some positives and some negatives and some criticisms. And I would say that I do understand we are a very consumer-driven world at this point. And so we do tend to buy things a lot, even though we get in these sort of trendy pathways of trying to declutter our lives. I do believe that we all do need to declutter many aspects of our life. And so tonight we're just going to talk about really Marie Kondoing your life, the trend, why less is more, and why letting go of some things, and not just things, but things in your life can be really helpful. Now, the Marie Kondo method has a few pieces to it that I think are actually quite helpful. I would say my favorite part so far is her teaching of how to fold things. I was practicing doing t-shirts the other day, and it felt really good. I'm not going to lie. Am I going to be able to keep that up? I have no idea. Probably not. But I was inspired to imagine teaching my children how to actually fold their clothes in a way that might, you know, provide more room in their drawers. And if you live in Laguna, most of us here are living in a smaller space, are compromising some part of our lives to live in Laguna. And so it would be helpful to be able to declutter things. Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to play the trailer from the Marie Kondo Netflix show, just to give you a little taste of what it's about. We're not going to talk a whole lot about that in particular, but I do want to share with you a little bit. And here it is.
They have so much stuff.
It's a never-ending battle to fight the clutter.
With the baby coming, we got to get our stuff in order.
We had to downsize from a 4-story house to a 2-bedroom apartment.
I lost my husband. I don't know that I have everything it takes to get rid of his belongings.
Hello. Hello. I'm Marie Kondo. My mission is to clean up through the world.
Let's start tidying.
This girl's no joke.
This is amazing.
We have too much stuff. It's official.
It's so hard to let it go.
I don't want to just, you know, dump it. I want to be thoughtful about it.
Choose items that spark joy for you.
Spark joy. It's not as easy as I thought it was going to be.
We're on board. We want to change. I just want it to be strong enough to change me.
I can let it go. Arigato.
I am going to figure out what sparks joy in my life.
I can't believe you can touch the carpet.
New day, new joy.
Thank you for being here for us and wanting to help us.
I hope you know how much this means to me.
Here we go.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. That was the trailer from the new Netflix series regarding the Marie Kondo method of tidying up. And I do think that as you hear a little bit in the clips, you know, it makes us all emotional. The idea of that we're not just letting go of things. We're often letting go of the things in our lives that have value in some psychological way. Maybe it's an attachment to an identity with our things. Maybe it's an idea that we'll never have something again, so we have to hold on tightly to it. So I do think there are many reasons why we acquire things and why we find it so hard to let them go. Although I did read that there has been quite an uptick in the number of donations to places like Goodwill, so I think that's a great outcome. Maybe we just do need to be inspired sometimes to let go. The whole concept is based really on, you know, does this thing in my life spark joy? And she has a way of doing it where you hold it in your hands, and she kind of describes it like when you hold a puppy, do you feel that way? And I like that idea. I like that idea really about when I go to buy new things. You know, do I really need this? My new thing in the last few years has been, do I love this? If it's a thing I need, like batteries or something like that, like who cares? But if I'm buying, you know, new clothing or a new handbag or whatever, or something for my house, even just home goods, because we all know what that is like. It's kind of nirvana in home goods, but it's also not so much, because I'm quite certain that if you gathered up all the things that we donate that we originally got from home goods, it would be more than we ever wanted to imagine. So what she does, though, she talks about, you know, does it spark joy? And I like that. Now, she also has this idea of putting things into categories. So you have a clothing category, a books category, a papers category, miscellaneous, and sentimental. Now, the idea of putting all your clothes, which as one episode she does, like taking everything in your closet and throwing it on your bed, it was kind of really illuminating to look at and imagine how many things we have in our closet that we are still holding on to, saving for another day, bought but may never wear. Most of us have things with tags on them. Not all of us, obviously, but I think even if it's little things you buy, sometimes you think you're going to use something and you don't. So I think that's a great idea, is going through your clothing and going through your kids' clothing. I think we often, you know, our kids grow so quickly that can be really helpful. The category of books has received some decent criticism with regard to those of us who love books and cannot let go of our books. The idea that Marie has less affinity for her books or books, so that you only should keep books you completely love. There's a little debate in that area. I'm not going to go there. I'm a book lover, so I get that one. Papers, things that, you know, are important, miscellaneous items, which frankly covers a lot of things, and things that hold sentimental value. This is where I think it can get a little sketchy, because if we really, you know, aren't being honest with ourselves, we could really tell ourselves that we are attached to many things that we have sentimental value of and not let go of them. So I think you may have to devise your own system for that, but what is it, you know, what are you holding on to? What does it really mean? And I'm going to play a little bit of a video in a little while that talks about holding on to sentimental items from a loved one and what that really is about. So I like the idea, like I said, only keep what sparks joy, but I think we have to keep it in reason, like everything else in life. You know, all these ideas sound great, but the reality of them can be a little more difficult. I do want to share with you, though, that we have some pretty powerful psychology behind the idea of cleanliness, because we do know that a well-organized environment does tend to contribute to a sense of well-being. When you walk in your house, when it's first been cleaned or you've just cleaned it, it feels really good. It's just really hard to maintain it. But let's just talk a little bit about this idea of what feeling clean does for us, right? So there's a trend, they're calling it organizational porn instead of like internet food porn or things like that. But it's really this idea of photos on, you know, Pinterest and other websites showing organized pens and desks and rooms and offices. And I think it's very appealing and alluring to us for many reasons, some of which are very psychological, obviously. But, you know, let's go through some of the issues or studies, I guess, that connect to this idea of cleanliness, okay? So there is some really interesting positive psychology behind organization. This means that sort of keeping your things clean and organized is actually good for you. And a study by a professor at Indiana University found that people with clean houses are healthier than people with messy houses. So that seems kind of obvious. But what this person did was they tracked the physical health of almost 1,000 African-Americans between the ages of 49 and 65. That is a demographic known to be at increased risk for heart disease. And they found that participants who kept their homes clean were healthier and more active than those who didn't. In fact, house cleanliness was even more of a predictor for physical health than neighborhood walkability. In 2010, there was a study published in the scientific journal Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, and they used linguistic analysis software to measure the way 60 individuals discussed their homes. Women who described their living spaces as cluttered or full of unfinished projects were more likely to be depressed and fatigued than women who described their homes as restful and restorative. And the researchers also found that women with cluttered homes expressed higher levels of the stress hormone cortisol. So I totally get that one. When I come home from work, my house is a mess and some chores haven't been done. I'm not going to lie. It is not my favorite time of day. And I'm not somebody who cracks the whip on that issue. I have to work on that one with my kids because I'm not a big yeller about chores. But I don't like it when it's messy. So I understand it puts us in a difficult situation. I will say that when you tie it to immediate consequences, it tends to work better. But like everything else in life, you have to stay on top of that. Okay, so in 2011, researchers at Princeton University found that clutter can actually make it more difficult to focus on a particular task. Specifically, they found that the visual cortex can be overwhelmed by task-irrelevant objects, making it harder to focus attention and complete tasks efficiently. And finally, a survey conducted by the National Sleep Foundation found that people who make their beds every morning are 19% more likely to report getting a good night's sleep. People who were surveyed also reported benefits from having clean sheets. Specifically, 75% of people said they get a better night's rest when their sheets are freshly cleaned because they feel more comfortable. So, I mean, if all this is so obvious, it's like, okay, why are we holding on to everything? Why don't we spend time cleaning? Well, I think obviously it's pretty clear. First of all, like I said, this idea that we hold on to things is because it's more than the actual things. These items, these possessions, they often hold a connection to our identities, maybe our fears or our dreams, our losses, our worries about what's coming, what we may never have again. And I do think that we are an extremely exhausted, overworked, and constantly overwhelmed culture. And it's really hard to stay on top of those things, especially when it comes to, I think, keeping your home tidy. And when you have children and animals and partners, certainly if you're by yourself, it's probably a lot easier. But as you begin to exponentially add the dynamics of family and people and work and all of those things, especially if you do not have housekeeping or very rarely have housekeeping, it is a blessing to have housekeeping, I will actually say. I think that we often take that for granted if we don't, until we don't have it. So it's hard. We're tired. And the last thing I want to do when I come home is spend another hour tidying my home. And so that's why I like this idea. I do think that having less things or more organization, I actually wondered if Container Store has had an increase in sales, and I bet you they have. That this idea of organization, you go in there when having a sale, we want to be more organized. But I do think we have to be able to understand that we, you know, there is a piece of this is directly related to the amount of items we have in our homes, in our lives, in our cars, in our offices. But it also is a time issue. So I guess it would be, you know, pretty easy to say that the less things you have, the less you'd have to spend getting them organized. So there is something to be said for also, I think, having, you know, having the ability to be okay in a little bit of chaos. I do believe that people who are obsessively and compulsively focused on cleanliness, and I'm not talking about diagnosable OCD, but just, you know, it's just they cannot function, that that's not necessarily good either. We do need to be in that sort of river of rigidity and chaos, never being one or the other, that sort of flow. And so I think that there is a moment in time, let's say when you have young children, that you're going to have toys. You're going to have clutter. You're going to have breast pumps or bottles or diapers. You know, things tend to just explode when you have a baby. But I do also think there's a place for, as your children get older, having toys in a certain area, not letting them take over your home. One of my favorite episodes on Queer Eye is about, you know, this family where the toys have taken over the house pretty much. Just every room, it has some child-focused issue in it. And I don't think that's good for us as adults in terms of well-being. So if you haven't seen Queer Eye, I highly recommend it on Netflix. It's just awesome. And that is really another show about organizing our lives and trying to find what works and really taking the best parts of ourselves and putting them all together so we can live our best lives. But, you know, the idea of letting go, of living with less, I really do think has profound potential and implications for how we live our lives. And I was going through a lot of videos trying to find the best talk or the best information. And, you know, there were some good ones. There's some great ones on hoarding. I mean, really amazing about talking about hoarding and talking about, oh, I gave everything up in my life and what it looked like. But I like this one so far, of all of them so far that I went through. It's called The Art of Letting Go, and it's by The Minimalists. If you haven't heard about them, they have a great website, theminimalists.com. And this was actually almost 2.5 years ago, but I'm going to play this one. It's about 18, 19 minutes, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more and wrap up the show. So here is The Art of Letting Go as you're listening to Moody with Dr. Sage on KX93.5.
My name is Joshua Fields Milburn, and this is Ryan Nicodemus. Together we run a website called theminimalists.com, and you know, we promised the folks we'd kick things off this afternoon with something inspirational. Something to get y'all excited. So I'd like to talk about something uplifting. Let's talk about death. Now, if any of you are uncomfortable talking about death, now might be a good time for you to leave. I have a feeling we'll be seeing him again in a minute. Anyway, yeah, we could talk about death. Let's see, 7 years ago, I was 28 years old, and up until that point in my life, I had achieved everything I ever wanted. The six-figure salary, the luxury cars, the closets full of expensive clothes, the big suburban house with more toilets than people, and all the stuff to fill every corner of my consumer-driven lifestyle. Man, I was living the American dream. And then my mom died, and my marriage ended, both in the same month. And these two events forced me to look around and start to question what had become my life's focus. And you know what I realized? I realized I was so focused on so-called success and achievement, and especially on the accumulation of stuff. Yeah, I was living the American dream, but it wasn't my dream. And it took getting everything I thought I wanted to realize that everything I ever wanted wasn't actually what I wanted at all. You see, just a year earlier, Mom, she moved from Ohio down to Florida to finally retire, because that's what you do when you live in the Midwest. And, a few months after she moved down there, she found out she had lung cancer. And a few months after that, she was gone. I spent a lot of time with her down in Florida that year. She went through her chemo and radiation. But when she passed, I realized I needed to make one last trip. This time it was to deal with her stuff. So I flew from Dayton, Ohio, down to St. Pete Beach, Florida. And when I arrived, I found about 3 apartments worth of stuff crammed into Mom's tiny one-bedroom apartment. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not like Mom was a hoarder. She wasn't. I mean, I didn't find any dead cats in her freezer. But she owns a lot of stuff. 65 years worth of accumulations. Did y'all know that the average American household has more than 300,000 items in it? 300,000! But of course, most of us aren't hoarders, right? No, we just hold on to a lot of stuff. We hold on to a lifetime of collected memories. I know Mom certainly did. And so I did what any good son would do. I think that's me on a bad hair day. I called U-Haul. I called U-Haul and I asked for the largest truck they had. In fact, I needed one so large, I had to wait an extra day until the 26-foot truck was available. And as I waited for that U-Haul to arrive, I invited some of Mom's friends over to help me deal with her stuff. I mean, there was just too much stuff to go at it alone. Her living room was stuffed with big antique furniture and old paintings and more doilies than I could count. She loved doilies. And her kitchen was stuffed with hundreds of plates and cups and bowls and ill-assorted utensils. And her bathroom was stuffed with enough hygiene products to start a small beauty supply business. And her linen closet, well, it looked like someone was running a hotel out of her linen closet, which was stuffed with mismatched bath towels and beach towels and bed sheets and blankets and quilts. And don't even get me started on her bedroom. Why did Mom have 14 winter coats stuffed into her bedroom closet? 14! Now, come on, she lived in St. Pete Beach, Florida. Suffice it to say, Mom owned a lot of stuff. And I had no idea what to do with any of it. So I did what any good son would do. I rented a storage locker. When I called, I asked for the largest storage unit they had. You know what they asked me? Do you want one that's climate controlled? I said, climate controlled? Is that so Mom's stuff could be comfortable? No, I don't want one that's climate controlled. Just give me a big box with a padlock on it. You see, I couldn't co-mingle Mom's stuff with my stuff. I already had a big house and a full basement full of stuff. But a storage locker? Oh, yeah. A storage locker would let me hold on to everything just in case I needed it someday in some non-existent hypothetical future. You know, just in case. Just in case. The three most dangerous words in the English language. Anyway, so there I was attempting to finish packing Mom's stuff when all of a sudden I noticed these four boxes. There were these old printer paper boxes, kind of heavy, sealed with excessive amounts of packing tape. So I pulled them out one by one. I noticed that each box was labeled with just a number written on the side in thick black marker. And all I saw was 1, 2, 3, 4. And I stood there, looking down, wondering what could possibly be in those boxes. Looks like we're out of time, folks. Hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. No, it was my old elementary school paperwork, grades 1 through 4. You know, as I opened those boxes, my curiosity ran wild. And I thought to myself, why was Mom holding on to all that stupid paperwork? But then all these memories came rushing back. And I realized she had been holding on to a piece of me. She was holding on to all those memories in those boxes, right? But wait a minute. Those boxes have been sealed for more than 2 decades, which made me realize something important for the first time in my life. Our memories are not inside our things. Our memories are inside us. You see, Mom didn't need to hold on to those boxes to hold on to a piece of me. I was never in those boxes. But then I looked around at her apartment. I looked around at all her stuff. And I realized I was getting ready to do the same thing. Except instead of storing her memories in a box in my home, I was getting ready to cram it all into a big box with a padlock on it. So I did what any good son would do. I called U-Haul, and I canceled that truck. And then I called, and I canceled the storage locker. And I spent the next 12 days selling or donating almost everything. And I learned a bunch of really important lessons along the way. Not only did I learn that our memories aren't in our things, they're in us, but I also learned about value, real value. I mean, you see, if I'm honest with myself, I was just gonna selfishly cling to mom's stuff. But of course, I wasn't gonna get any value from it as it sat there locked away in perpetuity. But the truth is that by letting go, I could add value to other people's lives. So I donated much of her stuff to her friends and local charities, giving the stuff a new home. And the things I was able to sell, well, I was able to take that money and give it to the charities that helped her through her chemo and radiation. And when I finally returned to Ohio, I returned with just a handful of sentimental items. An old painting, a few photographs, maybe even a doily or two. And the final lesson I learned, well, it was a practical one. While it's true that sometimes our memories aren't in our things, it's also true that sometimes the things that we have can trigger the memories that are inside us. So while I was still in Florida, I took photos of many of Mom's possessions. And when I went back to Ohio, I went back with just a few boxes of photographs, which I was able to scan and store digitally. And those photos made it easier for me to let go, because I realized I wasn't letting go of any of my memories. Ultimately, I had to let go of what was weighing me down before I was able to move on. And to move on, well, I had to look in the mirror and take an inventory of my own life. Turns out, I had an organized life. But really, I was just a well-organized hoarder. I mean, everything looked great, sure, but it was just a facade. And I knew I needed to simplify things. And that's just where this beautiful thing called minimalism entered my life. And for me, it all started with one question. How might your life be better with less? You see, by answering this question, I was able to understand the purpose of minimalism. Not just the how-to, but the why-to. I learned that if I simplified my life, I'd have time for my health, for my relationships, my finances, my passions, and I could contribute beyond myself in a meaningful way. You see, I was able to understand the benefits of minimalism well before I ever cleaned out a walk-in closet. And so when it came time for me to actually declutter my life, I started small. I asked myself another question. What if you removed one material possession from your life each day for a month? Just one. What would happen? The end result? Well, I unloaded way more than 30 items in the first 30 days. Like way, way more. It became this kind of personal challenge, discovering what I could get rid of. So I searched my rooms and closets, cabinets and hallways, car and office, rummaging for items to part with, retaining only the things that added value to my life. Pondering each artifact in my home, I'd ask, does this thing add value to my life? And the more I asked this question, the more I gained momentum. And embracing minimalism, it got easier by the day. I mean, the more you do it, the freer and happier and lighter you feel, and the more you want to throw overboard. For me, a few shirts led to half a closet. A few DVDs led to deep sixing almost an entire library of discs. A few decorative items led to junk drawers who shed their adjective. It's a beautiful cycle. I mean, the more action you take, the more you want to take action. Ultimately, though, the purpose of minimalism has to do with the benefits we experience once we're on the other side of decluttering. Hence, removing the clutter is not the end result. It is merely the first step. I mean, it's possible to go home, get rid of everything you own, and be absolutely miserable. To come home to an empty house and sulk after removing all your pacifiers. That's because consumption is not the problem. Compulsory consumption is the problem. And we can change that by being more deliberate with the decisions we make each day. Over the course of 8 months, I deliberately jettisoned more than 90% of my material possessions. Although, if you visited my home today, you probably wouldn't walk in and yell, "Oh my God, this guy's a minimalist." No, you'd probably just say, "Wow, he's tidy." And you'd ask how I keep things so organized. And I'd simply grin and tell you that I don't own much, but everything I do own adds real value to my life. Each of my belongings, my car, my clothes, my kitchenware, my furniture, has a function. As a minimalist, every possession serves a purpose or brings me joy. And everything else is out of the way. And with the clutter cleared, I felt compelled to start asking deeper questions. Questions like, when did I give so much meaning to my stuff? What is truly important in my life? When did I become so discontented? Who's the person I want to become? And how am I going to define my own success? And these are tough questions with difficult answers, but they've proven to be much more important than just trashing my excess stuff. And if we don't answer these questions carefully, rigorously, then the closet we just decluttered will be brimming with new purchases in the not-too-distant future. So as I let go, and as I started facing life's tougher questions, things got simpler. And the people around me noticed that something was different, too. I mean, people at work started saying things like, "You seem less stressed. You seem so much calmer. What is going on? You seem so much nicer." And then my best friend, a guy named Ryan Nicodemus, whom I've known since we were fat little fifth graders, he came to me one day, and he said he noticed how happy I was. And that opened him up in time to the concepts of minimalism and living a meaningful life with less. And as he simplified his life, that made room for these deeper conversations, conversations about how our unchecked consumption wasn't just affecting our lives, it was infecting our entire society.
You see, the more we consume, the more waste we produce. But then, of course, the opposite is also true. If we consume less stuff, we produce less waste. As y'all might know, if the entire world consumed like the United States, we would need over four Earths to maintain our unchecked consumption. How can we, as consumer-driven Americans, keep consuming like this? It's pretty simple. We go deeper into debt. That's how. Did you know the average American carries four credit cards in their wallet? And 1 in 10 Americans has 10 or more active credit cards. And the average credit card debt is over $16,000. The total consumer debt in the United States is nearly $12 trillion. $12 trillion! Let me just put that into perspective for a minute. If you went out and spent $1 every single second, it would take you more than 31,000 years to spend $1 trillion. In fact, if you went out and spent $1 million a day ever since the birth of the Buddha, you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion by now. And we have nearly $12 trillion in debt. And the only way out is to let go. When we let go, our actions, and encourages others to let go too. 6 years ago, Josh and I, we let go of our stuff so we could start living a life that aligned with our values. We started consuming less so we could start living more. And when our lives became our message, we started a blog so we could share that message with others. We called it TheMinimalists.com. Since then, we've written books about simple living. We started a podcast about intentionality, and we released a documentary called Minimalism, all in an effort to add value to other people's lives. And that's really why we're here today. We really, really hope that we can add value to all of your lives. So if you leave here with just one message, we really hope it's this. Love people and use things, because the opposite never works.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. You were listening to The Minimalists. That's Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. Known as The Minimalists, they had a documentary come out in 2016. They've published books, and they have a whole philosophy on living with less. And I'm not necessarily advocating their belief system. I just want to share with you the different ideas and the idea that, you know, perhaps beginning to take a moment to ask yourself, why am I so overwhelmed? Why is my home and my car and my office and my computer and my cell phone and my mind and my heart so stuffed with things and thoughts and pressure and apps and concepts? It's so much. It's too much. And I think we often think that, well, more is better. And sometimes more is better, but it's not always better. And it often makes our lives worse. There are over 15 million people that struggle with hoarding. And if we think about most of us, okay, so I'm not a hoarder, but look around your home and your life and ask yourself, where am I just filling everything up without really being mindful of why and what the costs are to me for this way I'm living? We've already talked about the science of cleaning and how it really can be very beneficial to live with more order, and it can contribute to well-being. And I'm not talking about perfection here, but a general sense of organization. And it's hard. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have that nailed either. It really is. But let me just give you some stats on what we spend on self-storage units. It's an industry revenue total of about $38 billion in the U.S. for storage units. And there are somewhere between 44 and 52,000 storage facilities in the U.S. We rent about 2.3 billion square feet is what we rent. And that's about 7 square feet per person. And about almost 10% of households rent a storage unit. And the average monthly cost is close to $100. So it's not just our things, though. What I'm asking you is, where is the storage unit in your life? And is there an area, maybe it is your things, but are there other places in your life that feel out of control, overwhelmed? And where are you putting your things, like your emotions, your pain, your anger, your hopes, your dreams, your sadness? Are you gathering it all up and locking it away somewhere like a storage unit? Is it all too much in any one area so that it might really serve you to unpack, let go, and release some of that? And what is it costing you? What is it costing you from a physical perspective? Why are you working so hard to continue accumulating when it takes you away from people you love, from your passions? Why are you working so hard? What is it costing you so much to sit there and hold on to things in your life, like pain, like resentment, like sadness, that don't serve you? What do you need to let go of? So tonight we've talked a lot about things, but like I said, there's a lot of other stuff we hold on to. And whatever it is you're holding on to, whether it's your furnishings or your cars or your electronics or your emotions, you can't take any of it with you. All you have is today. So I don't know, maybe take a minute and ask yourself, where do I need to release and let go in my life? What am I holding on to too tightly? And what might lie ahead for me if I did? Thank you for listening to Moody with Dr. Sage, a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5. You can listen live, or you can just download the podcast. Usually I have it next up the next day. And please feel free to share with your friends. Please feel free to email me with any feedback at drkimsage@gmail.com or visit drkimsage.com. I have a ton of resources on my resources page. I'm always trying to find new ways to help my clients, people I care about, just find information on great books and great websites and great apps, you know, to help calm and create chaos less and joy in your life. Chaoslessness, that's my new word. So thanks for listening. And last question. What do you need to let go of?